If she's not already your friend, she will be afterwards. This is Edwina.
My name's Edwina Hocutt, and I'm a member in good standing of the Center Point, Alabama, Al-Anon Group. We meet on Monday night, and I want to thank the committee, I think, for asking me to do this. I can tell y'all I'm scared to death. So I'm probably going to shake, and my voice is going to quiver for a while, and you may not understand what I say. When we first moved up here, my husband told Mr. Hearn, or Mr. Tom, that God sent us up here to teach him for Wallace to teach him how to talk, because we kind of talk slower than some of y'all do. Whew, I'm nervous. I don't know if I can get started or not. I come from a small town in Alabama, Northwest Alabama. I'm the third of four children. There's two boys and two girls. I'm the only one married to an alcoholic. As far as I know, there's no alcoholism in my family, but I was attracted to him. Matter of fact, he had dated a friend of mine, and I saw him, and I said to my mother, I'm going to go with him. Little did I know what I'd be getting into. But as I said, I grew up in a small town, and I knew that there were people that drank. There was no drinking in my family. I was raised as a good Baptist, so you're not supposed to drink, and you're not supposed to run around with people that drink. They're not the kind of people that you're supposed to associate with. Of course, at the time I met him, I didn't know he drank. And he did not drink around me until we had been going together for a long time. Then we would go to some parties and stuff, and he would drink. I had some people tell me they thought I always drank with him, too, because I'd drink Cokes, but I didn't have anything in it, because I never drank until after I was married. Never had any dealings with alcoholism or alcohol at all. I didn't know what it was about. So we dated for about 4 years. Then he got transferred to Meridian, Mississippi on his job. So that cost us to get married. We'd probably still be dating if it hadn't been for that. I mean, we went steady for 4 years, so it's been a long time that we've been together. And we moved down there, and we had some really good years. Well, we had about 1.5 good years. And then one day, out of the blue, he decides to come home with some beer. And in my good upbringing, man, that was just the wrong thing to do for me. I just couldn't stand it. I had to fix this man, and he was not going to drink. Needless to say, he did. But he would come home and he would drink one or two beers. And then that would be fine, it would be no problem. But as I understand now, being in the Al-Anon program, I watched the progression get worse. I watched him be able to handle alcohol for a pretty good while. Probably 10 years. We were married 10 years. And he drank a lot. He would drink real heavy. And sometimes he would get drunk, but sometimes he wouldn't. But in our situation, I don't know about y'all, but all our friends were his friends who drank. And we always went places he wanted to go. We did the things he wanted to do, and it always reverted around drinking. We either went fishing or we went to somebody's house, and the men were always drinking. Some of the women drank, but not most of the time they were good Al-Anons that didn't drink or didn't like it. I did try drinking with him, but I don't know. I always felt guilty because of my upbringing. And my mother used to tell me, and I don't know where she got this. I don't know if somebody had told her, but she said, you don't need to drink because you may be one of those that can't stop once you start. Where she got it from, I don't know. But I guess I always felt guilty when I drank. Going to the Baptist church, they believe drinking is a sin, so I felt like I was sinning. So I made a promise to God that if he would help me, that I would not, if he would give me the strength and the courage, I would not ever drink again. So far, that's been true. But after coming to Al-Anon, I'm grateful, because if it hadn't been for that bringing, I might be up here as an AA speaker today. And I may get lost, y'all, so just bear with me. Anyway, we went on, and we've been married for about 10 years, and he began to drink a little more and a little more, and I had changed jobs, and I had gone to work for this attorney. And I had a friend that I could talk to. He was a boss as well as a friend, but his wife, his first wife, had drank alcoholically. He didn't say she was alcoholic, but he said she drank a lot, and he understood what I was going through. Well, during this time when Wallace was drinking, I'd go, he and I'd sit in his office, and I'd tell him all my woes. And, of course, he didn't have an answer, but he listened, and I guess that's what saved my sanity, that and being able to go to see my parents, who lived almost 3 hours away. And but I, you know, I was not the kind of wife now that I know I could have been, because when we would go out in public and his drinking would be bad, I would put him down in front of people. And I'm real ashamed of that today. I don't know if I thought that made me feel better about myself, or if it, I think I thought I could control what he was doing by telling other people how he acted and what he did that would make him change, because control has been a big thing in my life. When I was growing up, my mother's parents lived with us. So we always had two parents, two sets of parents that we listened to. My grandmother was a real strong, dominant woman, and she was the dominant one in the family, and what she said went. And I'll give you a little bit of history about why the control was so important in my life, because she would tell us how to do things. And if we did it differently, and it wasn't the way she thought it should be done, then it was just wrong. So I grew up believing that if you didn't do it my way, then it was wrong. And I tried to change him all those years, telling him what he was doing was wrong. I kept telling him if he'd just quit drinking, everything would be okay. But my mother is the same way. She's the dominant person in my growing up family after my grandmother passed away. And my dad's real mild and mannered and just does his own thing and does what mother says most of the time. So I tried this on Wallace, but, you know, him being alcoholic, he just decided he wasn't going to do that. And I think not having any children, that made me worse, want to try to mother him and do things for him. And I did things for him. I did everything for him. But as I said, I went to work for this attorney, and I would talk to him. And he had married a girl a lot younger than him, and they ended up getting in trouble with drugs. And they sent him and his wife off the family or somebody to a treatment center. Well, when he went to this treatment center, he came back with a book from Alcoholics Anonymous that they'd given him in treatment. And he said, here, you can have this. You can read this. It might help you. I don't need it. So I took this book home. And from time to time, I would try to get Wallace to read from it. And he wouldn't read it, so I would try to read to him. Because I'd already read the chapter to the wives, and I thought I knew everything there was to know, and I was going to get this man sober, no matter what. And I was the one that, I mean, he hid his bottles, but I hid stuff too. When my parents, I would not let them come to see us because they didn't know he drank. And when they'd come, my mother would have to call and let me know that they were coming ahead of time so I could hide the booze. Yeah, we lived in this house, I don't know how long, but when we moved out, I found all kinds of six-packs that I had hidden in the closet that had never been opened. So I probably had a case of beer stashed away. I guess I thought I might need it one day. I don't know. But as things progressed in his drinking, I began to get depressed. He got depressed, and I began to live in a world of unreality. My world was to go to work and come home, check on him, and then go to bed and read a book and just leave him alone, because he stayed in the living room drinking and I stayed in the bedroom, either asleep or reading. I did a lot of sleeping back then, and I think that was a way to escape from reality, to deal with what was going on. And things just progressed on, and I did hear about Al-Anon before I got here. A friend of mine's husband was really bad drinking, and she asked me to go out alone one day with her. We went to two meetings, and I decided it wasn't for me because they didn't talk about him. I wanted them to tell me how to make him stop drinking, and they didn't have anything to do with that, so I didn't go back for a long time. But we did have another situation before he met Lou, where he was in the hospital. From the incident he told you last night about going to the chiropractor, he was in the hospital, and he was in there 2 weeks at a time. And as it ended up, I had to call my mother and tell her that he was in the hospital from drinking. after I'd hid it all those years. And they came down, and they didn't criticize him or criticize me. They said that they just didn't know what was wrong, but they had known something was wrong before. Anyway, this is probably going to be short, y'all, because I'm rambling. Anyway, as his drinking progressed, I got to where I would treat him worse and worse. I would fix stuff, and I would try to get him to go home with me for Christmas and Thanksgiving and all that kind of stuff, and he wouldn't want to go. And if he did go, then I would start a fight because he always wanted to leave early and go home, and I wanted to stay for the whole thing. He wanted to leave so he could drink on the way home. And, you know, I need to make amends to my family for all those arguments. I haven't done that yet. I haven't gotten up the courage. Anyway, Mr. Covington and I stayed together for a long time, and then I went to work for someone else. And then he ended up being alcoholic. So I've worked for three alcoholics and one maybe. So I think I'm attracted to that personality for some reason. I like the excitement of the stories that they could tell. Of course, when he drank, he was the quiet one. There was one incident right before he got sober. I was always the one that was talking, and he would tell you what he wanted to say, and then he didn't want to discuss it anymore. Well, that's just waving a red flag at me. I got to have my say, and it's got to be the last say, because then it's going to be it. It's going to be right. It's going to be my say. And he had done this to me one night, and this was when it was really bad. And he had left the living room, going in the kitchen to get him another drink, and I'm right behind him getting it. And he turned around and he said, "Well, I'll just kill you." I said, "Go right ahead, and you can spend the rest of your life in jail." I wouldn't have fought him for anything. But as I said, his drinking really progressed. I had started trying to find everything I could. And I don't remember how we did, but we started going to counseling when he was drinking, and he would go drinking. And this counselor would talk to him, and he'd talk to me, and he'd talk to us together. And when he would talk to me, he would tell me, he'd say, "You know, you may have to leave because he may never stop drinking." And I that was just not something I could do. I didn't think at that time that I had a choice. I did not have any children, but I didn't think I had any place I could go because my parents didn't know at that time. Anyway, we got over the incident I was going to tell you. When he was in the hospital, they had kept him on Librium and kept him passed out. Well, so when we decided we were going to take him to East Mississippi, which is a treatment center where you can check yourself in. At that time, it was a state hospital. And in the hospital, he agrees to go. So this friend that we had kept through all these years, friends, borrowed his daddy's Lincoln Continental and came to the hospital and got Wallace and was going to take him out to East Mississippi in this limousine. Well, he did. And he promised to go in there when he got there. But when we got there, he wanted to talk to the head man. And he had this head man's name, but it was the wrong head man. And he would not sign himself in. So I was devastated. I cried and I cried. And we went back, and this happened. His drinking got even worse. So I'd started going by this little restaurant every morning and eating breakfast. And that's where I met the lady that he talked about last night that was from my hometown. She had gone to school with my older brother. And I knew of her from being with him. And she's the one that I began to talk to and share with other than Mr. Covington. And she was a spiritual lady. She had a lot going. She worked for a church, and she just seemed to have it all together. She was a single parent, but she was handling things. And she and I became pretty good friends, and we started talking, and I began to tell her that I didn't believe God was working in my life anymore. I had always, as a child, been taught about God and had believed in God for all my life, but somehow or other I never used God on a daily basis. Well, when I talked to her and I was telling her what Wallace was doing, y'all, I wanted everybody to feel sorry for me because I told everybody except my parents how bad he was, what kind of person he was, and I thought that would do something to him too, I guess, still trying to make this man do what I thought was right, because I kept telling him if he just wouldn't drink, things would be okay, that he would be okay. But anyway, I met Margaret, And she and I talked for a long time, and I began to tell her how much he drank and how it was affecting me. And then one day she told me, she said, I have this person that I know that might be willing to talk to your husband. And I said, do you think he would? And she said, yeah, but I'll have to check with him. Said he belongs to an organization that I think could help him. And she didn't tell me who it, what it was. And she said, I'll go talk to him and ask him if he will meet with you. And so she did, and Lou agreed to meet with me. So I met him one day at church. And he talked to me about how Wallace was drinking and what all was going on in our house, and agreed to meet with him. So, y'all, I set up all this affair about him going over to their house for supper, because we were going to get him sober, because Lou was going to talk to him and he was going to tell him how to stop drinking. So, you know, I'm this one that manipulates all this time, and I think I'm doing what's right. But, you know, I'm grateful today that Lou was willing to talk to him, even though he didn't get sober right away. It introduced me to the AA program, because we started going to open AA meetings in a little bitty hole in the wall in downtown Meridian on a Friday night. Even though he was drinking, he was going, and we met some people that ended up getting sober when he did, in the same group. And it eventually led me to Al-Anon. One night we were out, we had been with Lou and Margaret, and Wallace had a seizure at Denny's, or Shawnee's. And I trusted this man, I guess, more than anybody at that time, because I felt like he knew what to do. And it turned out he was okay. But he got us to go into meetings. Like Wallace said, he'd go, but when he first started going, I wouldn't go. But I thought, you know, once I got him in AA, because those people had stopped drinking, then everything was going to be fine. And I had started working for this other lawyer who's in the program at that time, and I wouldn't go to Al-Anon meetings. Wallace said he tried to get me to go. I don't remember him talking about it. I guess that was my denial too. But lost my place. Anyway, I'll remember in a minute. Anyway, Lou agreed to meet with him, and we went over there, like he said, that night, and then Mom started going to the AA meetings, and I'd stay home, and my problem was that before he got into AA, I would cook things for him and do things for him, but I stayed in a depression for quite a while. But then I eventually got out of that, and I did do some things without him. We did a lot of things together, but I did do some things without him, and I think that really did save some of my sanity. But I think part of that helped me to have a lot of trouble with the first step when I got here. Anyway, I was at work one day, and I think right before I had started talking to Margaret, or about the time I'd started talking to her, and I realized I'd poured out his booze, I'd hid his booze, I'd set it up on the desk and tried to make him leave it on the desk so he would know how much he was drinking. I'd slam doors. That was a good thing for me too. When we had an argument, my last word was to slam the door. I just don't think what I did was the right way to handle it, but at that time I didn't know any differently, because I didn't have anybody that really to talk to. That my boss knew what he had learned in treatment, but he couldn't help me, and he didn't know anything about Al-Anon, so I didn't know how to get there till it was Lou. Anyway, we went to those meetings, and he stayed dry for about 3-4 months, and then the weekend that he talked about last night, he was supposed to go home to my parents with me. But he called me at work and said he decided he wasn't going to go. And I was real angry about that. I stayed full of anger when I didn't get my way. I would throw fits, like slamming the door, or cry. Cry was a good thing for me to try to get him to feel sorry for me and do what I wanted him to do. But it got to where it didn't work, y'all. Anyway, he got into AA, and I was introduced to AA at the firehouse. And I met some really great ladies in AA. And that was the first time that I really felt like love, you know, from someone other than my family. I knew my family loved me and always had, and I thought they always would. But I never could tell anybody other than him that I loved them till I got in, till we started going to the AA program and those people started helping us. I did eventually, as he said, Lou came to be his sponsor, and I guess I could say now Lou was my first higher power, because I believed that that man could do what nobody else had done, what I couldn't do all those years to try to get him to stop drinking. And Wallace had gone, I don't know how long he'd gone, probably 3 or 4 months, and Lou said to me one night when I went to a meeting with him, I started going to Al-Anon because Lou told me that's where he thought I needed to be. And I was going because I was going to do anything to help this man stay sober. Even up walking, like he talked about, we'd get up and we'd walk up and down the roads all hours of the night. The only time I ever called in to work to tell him I was not coming in, that I was sick, he asked me to because he was trying to get off a hangover. And he told me to call my boss and tell him I was sick and not come in. So I did that, and I went in the next day, and he said, "You wasn't sick, were you?" I said, "No." He said, "That's what I thought." But anyway, we started going to AA and Al-Anon meetings in Meridian, and I could not, I looked at the steps. Y'all, I could tell you, I could apply all the steps to him, but they didn't apply to me. When I got there, I didn't have a problem, y'all. I was paying bills, and I was going to work, and I was doing all the things he was supposed to do, like cutting grass and taking out the grass, the garbage, and picking up his beer bottles and his whiskey bottles and putting them in the garbage and all those things, and I just thought I was okay. I was at work one day, and I got to the point that I said, "God, I can't handle this anymore. You've got to do what you will with him." And I really believe, y'all, when I said that prayer and got out of the way, then God started working in his life. And in my life, because at that time I had gone back to the God of my childhood. I'm going to be okay in a minute. But you know, AA, and he drank for about 15 years. And like he said last night, the last five were really crazy. We had a friend of ours to get sick and die, and that was during the time he was so depressed. And I didn't know what to do. I was doing everything I could to try to get him out of being depressed. And he would stay up all hours of the night. And I was one of those people that could sleep anytime. Sleep was an excuse for me. And I can remember telling him, "Well, just lay your head down and don't think about it and go to sleep." And he would say he couldn't. And until I got to Al-Anon and my life really got unmanageable, I couldn't understand what he was talking about. He would talk about his mind being whirling. Well, I knew nothing about that. Because I guess because I thought I was in control, y'all, I didn't have to worry about all that. But anyway, we started going to meetings and got into AA and Al-Anon, and I started going because Lou told me that's where he thought I ought to be. After when he was sober for about 5 years, he said he had the heart attack, and I was devastated. But y'all, AA was there for us then. And AA has been there for us in a lot of situations. But I started going to Al-Anon, and I looked at the first step, and I could admit that I was powerless over alcohol. I had done that before I got there, but I could not admit that my life was unmanageable. Took me a long time to apply the steps to me. I looked at them, and I could apply them to him. I could see everything that applied to him, but nothing to me. But I eventually did start trying to work the steps. Like he said, he got sober, and our life was really great. We started going to meetings 2 or 3 times a week. AA and Al-Anon became our life. I was not a GR or anything, but I'd open up the meeting, and I'd chair meetings and make coffee and stuff. And so I did get involved in Al-Anon, even though I wasn't working any steps. And I did get a sponsor, but I didn't use her. So I just went to Al-Anon for a long time. Just to do what I thought it would help him. I thought if I went, it would help him to stay sober. And then what happened to me was he got into the AA program and really started growing, and I was left behind. And I'm still behind, y'all. But I'm getting there, one day at a time. And I looked at the slogans when I first went into Al-Anon, and they didn't mean anything to me. I knew the Lord's Prayer from going to church, and I knew the Serenity Prayer from somewhere, but I don't know where. Anyway, when we started to move to Virginia, when he told me we were going to have to move, and I didn't want to move. All our friends and all my family were in Alabama, Mississippi, and Virginia was a long way away. This was strange, folks. And I did everything. I bargained with God. I did everything I could. And then I got to the point when he told me we were really going to have to go, and I said, God, okay, whatever your will is, I'm willing to do it. I'm willing to go. And I have to say, living up here was probably six of the best years we ever had. We met a lot of great friends, and I think I really began to start growing when I let go of that, when I could accept that was God's will for us. And then I got up here, and I got a sponsor, and I did work. I went to a lot of meetings, but I've still got a lot of work to do. For me, AA and Al-Anon has become our way of life. We don't have many friends that are not in the program. And I found out that you can leave one program and you can go to another one in another state. It's the same program, it's just different people. I think one thing that helped me be able to move up here was Wallace said, we've got friends, we just don't know them yet. Then we stayed here for those 6 years and enjoyed being here, and then we decided, then he lost his job here and we were going to have to move to Birmingham. And I was really pulled. I wanted to go, but I wanted to stay. I wanted to be closer to my family. And I sort of went, like, leaving Meridian. I was leaving Mississippi with my nails dug in the ground, trying to pull the state with us when we came up here. And then when I started back south, I was pulling Virginia with me so I could take all my friends with me. But, y'all, since he's been sober, it's been the best 15 years, 16 years of our marriage. We had some good times while he was drinking before it got so bad. But, I tried everything I could, and I did everything I could to try to get him sober. But I'm glad I didn't. And I'm glad I don't have to take credit for him being sober today. And I'm glad I don't have to take, Al-Anon taught me that I didn't cause it, I couldn't cure it, and I couldn't control it. Well, I knew I didn't cause it, but I thought I could control it, and I thought I could cure it. But, one of the greatest things to me, too, was going to open AA meetings before I got into Al-Anon, but it helped me to understand a little bit about the disease and what the alcoholic goes through. It gave me a little bit of compassion for him, because when we were walking up and down those driveways, when he was really trying, I had compassion. But then when he'd get drunk, I'd revert right back to being the one that complained and griped and everything I could to try to get him to stop. And, y'all, he was a quiet, you wouldn't believe it now, but he was a little quiet, meek fellow that sat there and got drunk and didn't do anything else. I'm the one that's crying and ranting and raving and throwing books and slamming doors. But I didn't have a problem with my life being unmanageable. See, I think my denial was as bad as his when I got here. And it may still be there. But, y'all, Al-Anon has really taught me a different way to live. Today I'm in a really stressful job. It's one I had to learn all over. It's like starting a new career when I move back to Birmingham. I still work for a lawyer, but it's a different kind of law than I've ever practiced before. And it's real stressful. And then Wallace has had a lot of health problems this year. And I don't believe if I hadn't had Al-Anon and the friends and the fellowship that I could have made it. I'm going to be okay in a minute. I learned that I can accept things today. I don't have to like them, but I can accept them. That's a biggie for me. And I can turn things over to the God of my understanding today, who is similar to the God I had before. But before, I didn't know that I could use him. For some reason or other, I never got it in my bringing up in the church that you could use this guy on a daily basis and that he could be, I'm like some other people that said, he was the one that was going to get you if you did anything wrong and you never could do it right. So I was always worried about what he was going to do to me. Well, today I think The God of my understanding is my friend. I know he loves me, and I know he's always loved me. And today, I can be grateful for the miracles. I have a friend up here that says, keep coming back till the miracle happens. And I keep telling all those newcomers in Birmingham, keep coming back till the miracle happens, because it can happen. But you got to take the focus off of the alcoholic and put it on you. And y'all, I really believe that God allowed me most of the time to leave him to AA and to his sponsor. The hardest thing for me has been not to get in there and try to manage what's going on in his physical life. It's hard to sit back and watch somebody suffer and not be able to do anything about it. That's the second time that I really felt hopeless, that there was nothing I could do. The first time was when I really realized that I couldn't stop his drinking. And y'all, Alan teaches us today we've got a choice. I had a choice to leave, and I chose to stay. And I'm glad I did, because I loved him. And today he's the man that I always knew he could be, that I thought he was when I married him. And I hope eventually, maybe, I'll be the wife he thought he was getting. Whew. I know I've rambled. I thought I'd get over being nervous, but it hadn't gone away. But y'all, today really, acceptance for me and living one day at a time. And you know, when I saw that slogan, I thought, oh, who wants to live one day at a time? I got to know what's going to happen in the future, and I got to take care of what happened in the past. Today is, living in today is too hard. But you know, most of the time today, I start my day off and I say, God, I yield to you my life and my will to the best of my ability today. And just give me the strength, the courage, and the knowledge to do your will today. And that helps me get through this stressful job. And it helps me try to stay off of him and out of his business. I don't always do that. And I still, since I only have a cat named Bocephus that's my little child other than him. And so I try to leave him alone. And he and Bocephus gang up on me sometimes, and neither one of them do anything I want them to do. But they're the light of my life. And when we married, he was my friend, but today he's my best friend. We share a lot. And I know he used to tell me that I'd come home from work, and I'd be angry. And when he was drinking, he would tell me I was angry, and I'd say, I'm just aggravated. I'm not angry, but I'm screaming at the top of my lungs. I'm not angry. This was when he first got sober, and he had really gone to work and on his program and going, and I was just surviving. Today, I've gotten some good friends in Al-Anon all over the place, but I had some of them that said, I asked them to be praying hard this morning because I didn't know what I was going to say. This is the biggest crowd I've ever talked to, and I haven't done this many times, as y'all can tell. But anyway, today life is, you know, it's not like what I want it to be, but it's what it's supposed to be. And if I can just accept that I'm where I'm supposed to be. And this was a fear for me, y'all. When he was drinking, telephone rang at night, I wouldn't answer it because it was always bad news. It was never going to be anything good or just somebody calling with the wrong number. And I totally, during that time, let fear control my life. I reacted out of fear. I did everything out of fear. But I couldn't tell you that's what it was. That's just the way I was. And today, fear can still get control of me, like this morning. But, you know, thanks to the Al-Anon program today, I know I have a choice. I don't have to do that. I can ask God to help me get through that day or whatever that situation is. One of the slogans that I like the best is let go and let God. And another one is, but for the grace of God. And like I said before, you know, I really believe if it hadn't been for my bringing and marrying him, I might be in another program. I might have qualified real fast. But I am really grateful that I'm in Al-Anon today. I'm grateful, and most of the times, Today, I thank God for his sobriety. I thank God for AA and Al-Anon that it was here when we got here. And it still means a lot to me. And I want to thank the committee for inviting me. And I hope I've said something that might help somebody. Thanks.
She did great. I guess we'll just close this meeting like we usually do. Ed Runner will stand down in front for those of you that would like to speak to her. And if you're here and your miracle hasn't come, please stay till it does.